Well, I'm real happy to see each one here today, and I'm very thankful for our opportunity to meet together as a congregation. I'm thankful for the blessings of health and strength that each one of us enjoy. Appreciate each one of you here very much. I am thinking about the thought that we have today, and I know we record these, and Rodney posts them on the Church of God Preaching website. So I, anyone else that would listen, I trust that they will realize that what we have to say today for our congregation here is no different than any other place where people meet together. But I believe we all, any place, any specific location where people come together, the enemy tries to disband and cause things to not go like they should. All right? And the Lord is constantly trying to knit us together, build us up, cause us to have good relationships with one another and with Him. He wants us to be strengthened. He wants us to be encouraged. God wants us to have a vision. And the devil does everything he can to hinder every one of those things. And I would like for us to talk about something today. I'm just going to would title the message this morning, A Team. So I think about what it means to be a team. I read, well, maybe we'll turn there, 2 Kings, the 6th chapter. And we have a setting here where the enemy was endeavoring to overthrow Israel. And it was, I believe, the king of Syria. And every time that he would come, the Israelites were prepared. They had an ambushment set up for him, and they were right there on their game, so to speak. He could not surprise them in anything that he done. And after several attempts, it came very evident that there was something going on. There was information getting out, and he accused his own people, and they said, "No, it's not us. There's a prophet over there that the Lord's talking to, and then he's telling the king how to be prepared against your advancements." So he said, "Well, you find out where he's at. We're going to go apprehend this prophet, because obviously that's the root of our failure to overthrow Israel." So we want to pick this up maybe about thirteenth verse, 6th chapter of 2 Kings. He said, "Go and spy where he is, that I may send and fetch him. And it was told him, saying, Behold, he is in Dothan. Therefore sent he thither horses and chariots and a great host. And they came by night and compassed the city about." So just get this picture in your mind. I have this thing in my head that Dothan was a rather small village or city. But it doesn't matter how big it was. If it's something, a little settlement that would be called a village, to have enough military force to surround the whole thing is a significant amount. All right? If you just had two soldiers abreast, and it was, I didn't do all the calculations, but if it was 2 miles to in circumference, it'd still take quite a few soldiers. But there was quite a host. A host is a large number, all right? How big, I don't know exactly, but there was a large number. Compassed this little village, this setting where the prophet was, "And when the servant of the man of God was risen early and gone forth, behold, an host compassed the city, both with horses and chariots. And his servant said to him, "Alas, my master, how shall we do?" Well, now what's going to happen? We've been given the king information as to how to defend himself against this enemy. And now the enemy is camped around our house. And he said, "What are we going to do?" And he answered, "Fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them." So anytime we feel outnumbered, there's immediately an element of fear, right? If we looked outside and there was people all around the chapel, we have several windows here, and if we could look out the windows and there was a mob outside, maybe holding threatening signs, and maybe they begin to shout negative things about worship services and pleasing God and all of that, I'm going to tell you, there would be more than one of you that have a little bit of fear. All right? I'd say all of us would have some fear to deal with. And probably somebody would say, "How shall we do?" What are we going to do now? We're inside and they're outside, and it's not totally implausible to think that something like this could happen. There are places in this world where when Christians come together to meet, there are those that oppose them gather on the outside. And many times they make demonstrations, and maybe they create enough havoc that you couldn't hear yourself and we couldn't go on, even if we do have something that would amplify the voice. We couldn't drown out what would be going on the outside. Now that would be a fearful situation, right? That's how this servant of the prophet felt. He said, "Master, how shall we do?" And he said, "Fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them." What if that happened here? What if there was all that out here? And what if someone stood up and somehow was able to shout loud enough and say, "Don't be afraid. There's more with us than is with them." And if we counted right here, it wouldn't take a lot to outnumber us this morning. All right? Wouldn't take a lot. And some of you, if one person had the courage to say, "There's more with us than there is with them," so the rest of us would be thinking, "I don't know what you're seeing. I don't know what you're seeing." And that's what this prophet's servant was thinking. I don't know what he's got on his mind. And 17th verse says, "And Elisha prayed, and the Lord said, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. And when they came down to him, Elisha..." They didn't just stay out there. They came to Elisha's house. They surrounded it and they came down. Just kept walking in and a little closer and a little closer and a little closer. And when they got to Elisha's place, Elisha prayed unto the Lord and said, "Smite this people, I pray thee, with blindness." And he smote them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. And we know the rest of the story. Elisha said, Who are you looking for? Or I'll take you to the man you want to see." And he took and led him inside led this big army of blind soldiers inside this city walls where the king of Israel was. And then said, "Lord, open their eyes." That, y'all can read the rest of the story some other time. The point that I'm trying to make is that we feel outnumbered. It doesn't have to mean that there's people outside chanting negative things and holding up signs and demonstrating and making so much ruckus that we can't have a peaceable worship service. If that ever happens, Lord, help us to have the courage to keep worshiping the Lord. And Lord, help us to have the courage to encourage one another that there's more with us than there are with them, even if it looks like we're outnumbered. So I think about this. How do we take it from here? Song number 148 says, "I am fighting in the army of the Lord." Now, I don't know what host means to you, and I don't know what army means to you. But we don't have enough here this morning for me to thank host or army. All right? I don't feel like that we have an army. I feel like we can individually be in the army of the Lord. I believe I'm 100% on that page. But just looking at our numbers, I feel like that I don't feel like we're a host. Sometimes when we go to camp meeting, we can feel like a host. We can feel like maybe a small army or something like that, but I don't feel like we're an army here this morning. I don't even know if we'd make a good posse or militia. We're definitely not an army, and we're not a host, all right? But I feel like we can be a team. All right? So I looked this word team up, and if I look it up in an old 1828 dictionary, this is what I get. It says, two or more horses, oxen, or other beasts harnessed together to the same vehicle for drawing as a coach, a chariot, a wagon, cart, sled, sleigh, and the like. And a group of players. This is what I got from the Google dictionary. A group of players forming one side in a competitive game or sport. So, we're in basketball season right now, right? If you're in public school, this is basketball. Football's over and basketball is in. If I got my time periods right. Did you know when Webster wrote his dictionary, there was no such thing as basketball? Basketball wasn't invented until about 1891, and he wrote the definition of this word in 1828 in the dictionary I read it from. But I'd like for us to think about a team. You know, his definition was two or more horses or other livestock. It could be oxen, it could be mules or something of that nature, but something harnessed together to pull a common cause, a cart, a wagon, a piece of a tillage equipment in a field from years gone by. We got two, don't we? We got more than two, thank the Lord. We got enough this morning for a basketball team. You know, when you're playing basketball, there's five on the court, and depending on the a group of the organization that you play with, you can typically have to have a minimum of three on the bench, but 7 to 10 on the bench. So I just want us to think about what it takes to have a team. You got five that's on the floor playing, and you got 7 to 10 on the bench. And I want to believe that the Lord can use a team. And I want us to get a picture with the help of the Lord of what it means to be a team. To be able to, whether you want to think about it as pulling a load together, or what do you want to think about working towards moving the ball down the court and putting it through the hoop and into the basket. Originally, by the way, basketball was a peach basket. And when they threw the ball up, they had to retrieve it because the basket still had the bottom in it. Every time they scored a point, you had to get somebody up there with a ladder to get fish the ball out. And then they cut the bottom out of the basket, and now we use a steel rim with a net on it. Okay, and we still call it basketball. But that's what it was originally. It was a peach basket. I'd like to be able to plant the idea that although small in number, we can become a team. And we should be a team. If we can't be a team, we need to examine ourselves individually. So I'd like for us to think about what it takes to make a team. I'd like to go to 1 Corinthians, the 12th chapter, and we'll read several verses here just to paint a picture of the church. the church at large, but the church at a local setting. 1 Corinthians, the 12th chapter, will begin with verse 18. It says here, "But now hath God set the members, every one of them in the body, as it hath pleased him. And if there were all one member, where were the body? But now are they many members, yet one body. And the eye cannot say unto the hand, I have no need of thee, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. Nay, much more, those members of the body which seem to be more feeble are necessary, and those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, upon those we bestow more abundant honor, and our uncomely parts have more abundant comeliness." Comeliness here is talking about beauty or desirability. I don't want to distract our thought too much, but I'm getting the overall picture. But I just want to dwell just a little bit on this right here. Many times, the ones that's on the bench, so to speak, are the ones that can add the most emphasis and the most value. We should never underestimate the components of the team that seems to be the most insignificant. All right? We should never downplay one part of the team to elevate another part. All right? I believe that we are on the same level, every one of us. I believe the Lord wants to work in and through all of us. He wants us to be able to constantly have a picture of what we want as the end result. So he says here, "For our comely parts have no need, but God hath tempered the body together, having given more abundant honor to that part which lacked, that they should be no schism in the body, no division, no separation, but that the members should have the same care one for another." Is our care for one another the same? Sometimes that can be a difficult question. We can ask our difficult place to be in, because sometimes we have a perception that something's going on with this one or that one. We don't really know what it is, but we don't feel the same as we used to feel or as we do towards someone else. That's what this is talking about. He said that the members should have the same care one for another. I remember one time, one of the boys was complaining because of the treatment that I was giving them. I had an expectation for them, and they were not wanting to really do it. And they were telling me, you know, why do I have to do this, or why did I do that? And my wife, this about sent my wife over the edge, okay? But I just looked at them and I said, "Because I love them more than I do you. That's why I'm making it hard on you. I love them more than I love you." And this child looked at me and said, "No, you don't. No, you don't." They knew that I loved them all the same, but they was looking for some reason for why I was making them do something, so I just give them a reason. I mean, they was looking for one, weren't they? Why do I have to do this chore? Why do I have to be the one that picks up takes the potato peelings out to the chickens or whatever it was at that time? And I said, "Because I love them more than I do you." And they immediately knew that's not really right. Daddy loves us all the same. Did you know God wants us to have the same care for one another? And if there is something wrong, you know, the devil wants us to think, "Well, I don't think brother so-and-so likes me as much as he does other brother. Well, that's the devil working, right? And it's not just the men, it's the women too. You know, the women can say, well, so-and-so and so-and-so, they can talk about this and that, and they can get along just fine, but, oh my, when I try to talk to them, they don't talk. You know, that's the devil. And he's wanting to burn bridges. He's wanting to build walls. He's wanting to cause us to have schisms in the body. But the instruction here is that we would have the same care one for another. It means we love each other the same. And we love each other sincerely. Not, I love one of you better than the other one. All right? And whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it. Or one member be honored, all the members rejoice with it. How good are we at rejoicing with someone else? How good are we at rejoicing with someone else? Or do we look for a way to kind of help them not become elevated? Lord, help us. We need to rejoice with others that have been blessed. I'm happy for you. Somebody is able to achieve something in their life. Lord, help us to be part of the team. That is fantastic. I'm glad. You know, somebody sent me a picture. One of the children sent me a picture of their family. And so I told them thank you for the pictures. And I can't remember. I just told them, I said, I just feel so fortunate to be related to such good-looking people. You know, they look so nice in their pictures. They had a little family picture. And you know, I want them to look nice. I want you to look nice. I want you to be blessed. I want you to feel the blessings of the Lord. And when the Lord blesses us, one or the other, I want us to get, thank the Lord. I'm glad that the Lord has done something special in your life. Part of being on the team, you see. He says now, ye are the body of Christ, and members in particular. Verse 28 now. And God has set some in the church, first apostles, secondarily prophets, thirdly teachers, and after that miracles, then gifts of healing, helps, governments, diversities of tongues. And then notice something here. He said, are all apostles, are all prophets, are all teachers, are all workers of miracles, have all the gifts of healing, do all speak with tongues, do all interpret? But covet earnestly the best gifts, and yet show I unto you a more excellent way. Did you notice he left something out when he repeated that? He left out helps and governments. You know, many times on a team, we forget the helps and the governments. You know how important it is to have the gifts of helps and governments. If you've got a congregation without someone that has the gift of helps and the gifts of governments, you don't have much of a team. That's the plain, simple truth. You might have an apostle or a prophet or a teacher, but if you don't have someone that has the gifts of helps and the gifts of government, and it probably needs to be more than one, all right? You don't have much of a team. It's not going to function very long. It's not going to be sustainable. I believe God wants congregations to be sustainable. I believe He wants them to grow. But they won't grow if we're not a team. You know, if the Lord makes an army out of us, fine. I don't mean that disrespectful. If He makes a host out of it, wonderful. But we'll never get to be an army or a host if we don't start out being a team. We'll never be a large number if we can't be a team at a small number. We got enough here we got more than enough to have a team on the playing, on the court playing, and a plenty on the bench. We got more than enough for that here this morning. So, what's our place? So I'm thinking about a basketball game, five on the floor playing the game, have five positions. Now, all of them obviously do some of the same things. We have position one is called the point guard. And typically, he's the shortest, most nimblest player on the team, the point guard. Position two is a shooting guard. Position three is a small forward. Position four is a power forward. Position five is the center. He's usually the tallest. NBA players need to be about 6'10" or taller to play center. Okay? Most of the time, the people that play the point guard, the shortest one, they can actually be under 6 foot tall and still play that position in the NBA. Doesn't always work out that way, but some of them are. They're the most nimble. They're probably the best ball handlers. But notice this. They're also the one they call the floor general. The coach on the floor. The one that helps direct the plays. The smallest one on the team. Well, wouldn't you want the... What did they do when they chose Saul to be the king? He was the biggest one. He was head and shoulders above everybody else. He would have been more size matched to Goliath than David was. Right? If he was head and shoulders, we take us and line us up and we had somebody came in that was head and shoulders taller than us and then somebody come along that was a little bit taller than them, wouldn't we think the big guy ought to go take him? That's what we'd think. Saul was bigger than David. I don't have any, you might say, written proof of that, but that's just my belief that Saul was a bigger man than David was. But when Goliath came along, who went after him? David did. Lord, help us to recognize the value of every part. Every one of the basketball players knows how to shoot the ball. Every one of them know how to dribble the ball. Every one of them knows how to pass the ball. But every one of them has a strategic place on the team. Every one of them that's playing out there knows that when we go into our offensive maneuvers, I know there's a place that my teammates expect me to be. The guy that's the shortest doesn't end up underneath the goal. All right? And the guy that's the tallest is probably not the one that's going to be shooting for a three-pointer when you're playing basketball. He's going to be the one underneath doing offensive rebounds or maybe taking the pass and dunking the ball. That's the way they play. They have a lot of strategies, and I'm not a coach and I'm not a professional basketball player, but I know a little bit about it. Now, what about the players on the bench? I said, most organizations will require them. I don't even think they'll let you be recognized as a team in some areas if you don't have at least three on the bench. Some of them allow you 7 to 10 as a maximum, and I don't know. You know, we can have a lot more than that here, all right? But we got enough to have a bench and players on the field at the same time. So, what about the ones on the bench? Sometimes they get a little bad rap, don't they? What's one of the negative comments that you hear about the ones that's not playing? Bench warmers. You ever heard that? You ever heard that used as a term for people that come to church? Bench warmers. I don't like that. Do you? I don't want any of us here to be bench warmers. I want us to be on the team. So, do you know the ones they put on the court to start with, they call them what? Starters, first string. That's the ones that go out to start the game. But the ones that's sitting on the bench, I wonder how many of them bring a book to read. You think any of them are sitting there, lean back on the bench, maybe with their eyes closed? I wonder how many, today we're in a digital age, I wonder how many of them are sitting on the bench surfing pictures on their phone. What do you think the coach would do if he had five on the, he's trying to watch the plays and he's got five on the court playing basketball and he looks over there and he's got one of the guys over there drinking all the water out of the water bottles and he's got his thumb and he's rolling up and down and surfing the internet on his cell phone. What do you think the coach would do? He might call a timeout and he might say, "What are you doing? Go put your street clothes on and go get up in the stands. That you don't belong down here." All right? We're talking about a team this morning. I want us to get a picture of what it's like to be on the team. You know, people try out to be on the team, and it's a real important thing in school, when I was in school, to be recognized as part of the team. Whether you was the one that was in the starter string or whatever it is, or whether you were the one on the bench, to make the team was important. Is it important for us today to make the team? What about the picture, the overall picture of the church? Do you see it? Or is it just a place for you to go warm a bench and just see what happens? We're not a team when we do that. And teams will never become an army if they don't first become a team. People, congregations don't become a host by not becoming a team first. You know what the guys are doing on the bench? Every one of them knows that if they get substituted in, they're going to be substituted in for one of those five places. And it's not a random thing. Every one of them knows if I get substituted in, if the coach points at me and says, "Come over here," and I come over to the coach, I don't have to, and he says, "You're fixing to go in the game. I'm fixing to call a timeout and you're fixing to go in the game." We don't, that person that just got called off the bench, he doesn't have to wonder what place, what position I'm going to play. He already knows. All right? So what does that tell me he ought to be doing? And what does a good team member do that's sitting on the bench, knowing that if I get substituted in, I'm going to be the point guard? All right? I'm the next one that's going to play point guard. What's he doing? He's watching how his teammate is playing, and he's going to be trying to realize that this teammate has got some obstacles that I'm seeing from the sidelines that he can't see on the court. And he's also going to be watching his counterpart on the other team. That other team has got a really good point guard, and I've got to outmaneuver him for my team to be successful. So here's what happens. As you're sitting on the bench, you're analyzing the counterparts of the opposing team. And you're also rooting for your teammate that's out there. You know, it's not a very good team member if your team member is out there facing the opposition and you're saying, "Oh, I can't believe that. Just let me in, coach. I can do it." that's not the way to be a team member. If you're on the sidelines, you better be saying, if you're going to holler at him and say, watch over your left corner, your shoulder. They're coming up behind you. There's an opening over here. So something, you're in the what? You're in the game. You might not be out on the court, but you're in the game. So what does that tell us? When we come here, if you're not talking, if you're not exercising, if you're not doing something in our service, we need to be in the game. Where are you at today? Are you in the game? Are you just coming to warm the bench? You want to be a team? Or just coming to see a show? We're never going to make it if we're not a team. That's strong words. We're not going to make it if we're not a team. And we're not going to be a team if we're not in the game. I don't have enough energy in myself to put on a show for everybody. And nobody else here does either. We all have times that we're off the game, so to speak. We have things that we've met that's a discouragement, that's kind of taken the wind out of our sails. All of us have that. Are we going to be in the game? I don't bring another book to read while I'm at church. I don't bring another book to read while I'm on my job. I do my best to be on the game. If my brother is struggling in his prayer, I'm going to try to voice some encouragement while we're praying. You know, if we get down to pray, this is real basic picture of a team. We get down to pray, and the only voice that can be heard is the one that's praying. We're not a very good team. We're not a very good team. We need to be agreeing in prayer. When someone's testifying, we need to pay attention. They might say to say something that helps us. We need to be able to say amen to testimonies. We need to be prepared to encourage our other teammates. And we need to be thinking about, what can I say that would reinforce them? Maybe you can detect a sense of despondency. And maybe you can detect a sense of urgency in what they had to say. It might be their prayer request. It might be the testimony. It might be in a prayer. Lord, help us to know how to reinforce one another. If we're sitting on the bench, Lord, help us to know how to be in the game and not allow the enemy to cause us to just disconnect and go into neutral, I think, just freewheeling. Well, it's 11:21. He'll probably sit down by 11:45. We can probably make it to Brahms by 12 o'clock. Maybe we can beat the rush. That's disconnected. That's just disconnected. That's what it is. You know, I know that there's many people that are disconnected in their occupation. I'm just here for 5. At 5, I go home, or 3, or whatever the time is. I'm just putting in my time. I'm not here to make it the best that it can be. I'm just spending time. Please, there's more. I hope you see the benefit of a team. And I want to challenge us to be in the game. You know what one of the best antidotes for sleeping in church is? Get in the game. You know one of the best things to be blessed in service is get in the game. You know, if you come here and it's like, well, I'm just waiting. When they start pouring out blessings, maybe one of them will dribble on me. No. Move around spiritually. Move around, get in position. I look at, where's it going to drip next? I'm going to get under it. You see what I'm saying? I want to be engaged in what's happening. I want to know, what is the Lord trying to do here today? Is He trying to tell us something through some way? It could be the point guard and it could be the center. You see? It doesn't matter. We all have a responsibility to play the game. We're all going to be, sometimes we have to play defense. Sometimes we have to guard against the opposition that's coming. Sometimes a team is bigger. You know, I can remember people saying, well, certain school has got, boy, they've got a big guy. You know, when you're in high school, if somebody's 6'6" and they're playing against you and the tallest person on your team is 6', even, it's like, boy, I don't know about that. Whoo, we're going to be, and they've come to find out this fella can't even get his shoes off of the floor. All he can do is stretch out. And the 6' guy can just sail over the top of him. You'll find that. They can't play. Well, Lord, help us to be able to play the game and find our part. And it's not better that you're point guard or center or whatever. All of these positions, all they are is places to help move the ball. The team's objective is to make a score, to get another point, to win. There was used to be a song I heard once in a while on the radio. It was a contemporary Christian song that said, I've read the back of the book and we win. Do you believe that? I believe by the grace of God we can win. Sin does not have to control. Sin is defeated by the grace of God. It can be defeated. It is hope to our neighborhood. It is hope to our community. It's hope for our world. They don't know it yet, some of them, but it is the answer to their problems. And how are we going to take it if we're not a team? How are we going to demonstrate it if we're not a team? So I just want to challenge you this morning. Don't come to church to chase rabbits. I want you to be here, and if you're a little bit disconnected when you get here, breathe a prayer to yourself. Lord, help me to be in the game. Help me to stay connected. Lord, help me to not just be looking out the window or thinking about what we're going to have for dinner or worrying about something that I can't control anyway. You know, these are things that I have to deal with. I come here and sometimes there's things on my mind and it's like, Lord, I want to fix this and this and this, and it's not cars, okay? I want to fix these other things in people's lives and situations. Lord, what in the world can I do for all of this? And I'm sitting here in service sometimes, and the devil would like me to do nothing more than just have myself worrying about other things that I can't do anything about. And I'll be out of the game. And the next thing I know, it's, well, you know, why isn't somebody saying something on a Wednesday night? Well, it's because maybe I'm out of the game. Lord, help us. You see, I believe that Wednesday night, Sunday night, if somebody else has something, I don't have to be the one that's always talking. We can be prepared to share something and be a challenge to one another. Lord, help us to be in the game, to be part of the team, to see that there are many facets. And don't forget, a congregation without helps in governments is not much of a congregation. All right? Major component, major player in the game. You pray for me. I want to be in the game, and I want to be on the team. Pray for me.